part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time. I'm gonna do it part.
Yay! We all made it.
Is it really?
Yes.
All
it's
right.
It's like we never left.
It's like we never left.
Although I feel so unprepared for this, unfortunately.
Why do you feel unprepared?
Because I, it's been so long since I.
It's been like a week, dude.
I know, but I don't remember all the juicy details.
You'll remember.
You know that we totally got that big fight wrong? You know that fight in the second episode?
Yeah, I rewatched it. Second episode, not third episode. Yeah.
Well, no, but we aside from that, we got it wrong. The camera doesn't just stay there. It goes back and forth between the sides of the hallway. I mean, it still looks like it's one cut.
Yeah.
And it's still really, really good, but it doesn't hang back the way
all right.
I had it in our memory.
Stop nitpicking.
Okay.
It's just nitpicking. You're just nitpicking, Leon. Stop nitpicking.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
All right. So this is kind of a we should start out by saying that this is kind of an unprecedented episode of Part-Time Fanboy, because we've never really looked at something and sort of come back and done a part two on it. So this is Daredevil part two, and it was so nice we had to come back twice. And it's the same characters. I'm Christian. We have Liad. We have Paul. And we are all here to talk about Daredevil part two on
Marvel's Daredevil.
That's right. That's right.
Two.
I got to get it correct. I can't. Marvel's Daredevil. And this is.
Although, if you search on it in Netflix now, the movie doesn't come up.
Oh, really? Well, the movie's only on disc, like, and that's was the weird thing. I was just looking on the internet online at work to see if it had shown up yet, and what I kept coming up with last week was the Ben Affleck movie, and I was like, why doesn't Daredevil just come up? And then I went to type in Marvel, and Marvel's Daredevil came up, and I was like, that's weird. But anyway, so we said last week that we all pretty much loved this show. I had watched up to episode 6, and that's pretty much all we covered in the podcast. But damn, if there wasn't a whole lot of crap in those last, like, seven episodes?
Yeah, 7 episodes. I think we'd done up to episode 6.
Yeah.
And, you know, starting with episode 7, things keep getting good.
Damn. You know, I mean, I'm just going to say it, like, right out. I've been thinking about this since I saw the last episode last night, like, and I was tired, but I was like, I am watching this thing because it's awesome. I think this to me is like the Breaking Bad of like superhero shows. I think like, and saying Breaking Bad is like my favorite, it's like my favorite TV show of all time, like bar none. Like, I love Breaking Bad. I think it's like the most amazing thing. The acting is amazing. And I think as far as like superhero shows go, like, nobody's ever done anything better than this. I mean, in my opinion, obviously it's only 13 episodes, season one, you know, but as of right now, I'm like, this thing was just fantastic. How about you guys?
Well, it's no Mantis.
Manimal.
No. I mean, yeah, it was pretty solid all the way through. You know, it's not a perfect show because there are a few, you know, a few things that drag, but I think that it really is at the point of, like, you know, anything you find wrong with this show, it's pretty much nitpicking.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I totally agree with that. I agree with you, Christian. It really is. But the thing, it really is like one of the best Marvel shows or superhero shows. But the caveat to that is that, in a way, this isn't a TV show. I mean, honestly, the way the production of TV shows work, you know, the networks, all of the combination of everything combined to make TV shows what they are. And this is almost like a multi-part movie in a way, you know, because it's all delivered in bulk. They finished everything they could go when they were doing it. If they got to episode 13, did the final scene, were re-editing it and then realized they're missing a shot, they could go back and get it, you know. They could change things just like in a movie. I mean, it's a different format, but it is by far the best superhero version of that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, well, that's what TV shows have become, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, but I think this one benefits even more from the fact that it doesn't need to have commercial breaks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it really is like a series of 1 hour, you know, sort of self-contained movies. And, you know, with no commercial breaks there, you're actually getting, you know, after the credits, I mean, you're getting a solid, you know, 55, 56 minutes of show every episode. You're not getting, you know, 46 yeah. plus commercials.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And also, they don't do what TV does, which is, I mean, TV builds you up for the commercial so that you stay after the commercial. You know, and this doesn't have to do that. So it builds this, you know, it builds the tension, however is suits the story best within that, you know, 56 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like a train. It just keeps running. Like, as yeah. you're watching it, it just keeps... And I don't know how many episodes... I mean, Leah, you watched it pretty much, like, all in one weekend. I don't know how you did that, because
I don't know how you didn't.
Because that's the thing, is, like, I maybe watched, like... You know, the first weekend, I got to watch, like, what did I say, like, up to six, right? And mm-hmm. even then, I was having kind of, like, bad nights of sleep. And just, like, it's so intense. It's just, like, so, like, gritty. Some of the stuff that happens is so unpleasant that if you... I can't imagine, like, I know that you know somebody, Leah, that... that did watch it like all in one day, that yes. would just destroy me. There's no way.
If I had had the time, without a doubt, I would have watched it all in one day.
Oh,
it was
God.
So good. I couldn't put it down. The only reason I did was I had a work convention the weekend it came out. I honestly don't know how, like, if you have the time, how you don't just binge this from start to finish. Because at the end of every episode, I couldn't wait to see what happens in the next one. And not like horrible cliffhangers, like, you know, cheesy, like, is he gonna die? Like, it's not that. But it's just such a good story, and they leave with, you know, there's so much more story. I couldn't help it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I had had the time, I probably would have done that, but I would have been mentally messed up afterwards. I think I would have been, you know...
I found that 2 episodes a night did me really well.
Yeah, and you're probably right. I mean, I think I might have stuck to something like that.
It's funny. It's like we're talking about dosage here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true, though, because, I mean, it's really funny because I was talking to a friend, again, you know, talking about Breaking Bad. It's like I remember we were – when, you know, I was binging on Breaking Bad for a while, and I literally remember, I don't remember which season, but Amy and I, we had to stop. We're like, we have to stop. We got to take a break, like 2 days, and then we got to get back to it, because it was just so mentally, like, tiring and, like, just disturbing, you know what I mean? Not in a bad way, but in a way that you're just like, this is so intense, like, I cannot, like, handle it right now. And that's
the
way
totally
I felt about
agree
this.
With you.
Yeah.
But you see, I agree with you about Breaking Bad. Like, I cannot binge watch that show. And in fact, I stopped watching it on season 4 when it was on TV, because I was going through, like, a messed up part of my life, and it was just too, even just watching one episode, it was, like, too much.
Yeah, yeah.
This show, I don't get that from this show. It is super intense, but in all the right ways, and it's exciting. I think it's the action, the addition of the action and stuff makes it really exciting.
Yeah.
So, I can totally binge it, like, no problem.
It's really funny because, you know, you talk about the action, but I was, like, really paying attention to certain episodes, and I'm like, I don't think we've seen, like, there'll be like long stretches where there's no fighting, and I'm like,
oh, for sure,
you know,
you're absolutely right. But when it does happen, it's really good.
Yeah, yeah, it's been really good. I think the one sort of, well, in the very beginning of the episode, the one with the ninja, Japanese guy, in the beginning of the episode, I thought that fight sequence was like a little weak, but by the time they got to the end, I was like, whoa, like,
they did such a good job building that one up, and they did, like, that was the episode I was talking about last
year. I want to give major props to you, Liat, because you did a great job of not spoiling it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they did such a good job of, like, intercutting the whole episode, you know, as the episode was kind of flashbacks. They did such a good job of intercutting that and going back to the fight and going back and forth. And they didn't do any of that, you know. They didn't bother going 5 hours before, 4 hours before.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Whatever, you caught it. It was clear, and it built so well.
It was actually sort of integral to the plot because, I mean, basically, as everyone else, you know, basically, as like his plan is taking a hit, he's taking a hit. You know,
yeah.
You know, it was really, really well done. Why don't we jump back to like episode 7 and sort of take it from there?
Yeah, yeah. I think we should get into the specifics
that's
of certain
episodes.
Episode 7 brought in, you know, a major new character, which is Stick, his mentor, the guy who trained him. And wow, what amazing casting was
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Scott Glenn.
Yeah, yeah, Scott Glenn. I mean, he did a fantastic job. I mean, I think that episode really, it's really funny because, like, they mention it in another episode where, you know, obviously his dad was a boxer. I think, you know, jumping a bit ahead, spoilers, but, you know, when Foggy kind of discovers his identity by accident, you know, and Foggy says something to the effect of, like, yeah, I knew your dad was a boxer, but what's with all the jumping around ninja stuff? Like, that's definitely something that I was starting to, I mean, obviously I know Daredevil, but I was like, how are they going to explain that in the course of this series? And with that Stick episode, they just, like, they were like, this is why he's so badass, or, like, such a good fighter, you know? Although there was a part of me that would keep watching episodes and be like, Daredevil, man, you get your ass kicked a lot. Like, he got his ass handed to him, like, several times in this show.
Dude, you know, he's blind. Mean? Give him a break.
Well,
But they did. They also did something really good with that episode. There were a few things really cool. So, on a very basic level, his fighting style, he's always done the jumping around and stuff, and he even used the taser as a stick and, like, bounced it off of something in, like, I think the first episode. Mm-hmm. But he's been using mostly hand-to-hand fists.
Yeah.
And then after the episode with Sticks, he starts using the sticks more often, which he's, you know, which the character is famous for.
Yeah.
And a fun part about that, too, was that Stick stopped teaching him after teaching him how to use sticks, so he never went on to swords or knives or anything like that.
That's
so he only
point.
Uses sticks because that's where his training ended.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like on a superficial level of things, but a really cool thing is that with Stick, they started the whole idea of the hand and all the mystic stuff and the war and, like, all that stuff that I don't know all the details of it, in all fairness. I know some of it because the hand and I do know some of the stuff.
I think
let me break it down for you. So here's the deal. The hand is, you know, the ancient mystical ninja society.
Yep.
Stick belongs to a group called the Chaste, which is an offshoot of the hand who disagreed with the killing of the innocent the hand were doing. So Daredevil was being trained in the ways sort of the hand by sort of a counter hand group. Right. And the nice thing too is apparently this is going to all tie in with the Iron Fist.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to tie into Iron Fist for sure.
Yeah.
And possibly the whole, what is it, they become the Defenders?
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Right. Good old, little trivia here that I read today that they initially wanted Sonny Chiba for the role.
Really?
Of Stick, but it didn't work out, so they went with Scott Glenn, which ended up being, I think, a great choice nonetheless.
Yeah, but, no.
Yeah, Sonny Chiba.
Can you imagine Sonny Chiba?
I would have lost my shit.
Yeah, I know. Street Fighter. That's so great. No. I mean, yeah, Stick was really... the great thing about that episode, too, is, like, obviously... Like, it's really funny because it's also, like, psychological training, right? Because as soon as Matt shows him any affection or starts to place him as a father figure, like, that's when he cuts it off. Like, that's it. Like, that we're done. And he just, like, walks away and, like, you've disappointed me. And it's really great because they show that, yeah, Stick didn't, like, wasn't really disappointed in him, but it was just part of his training, the training to be, like, you know, things are going to disappear from you and you're not going to know, like, when it's going to happen or when it's going to, you know, like, I think Stick walking away wasn't the fact that he was really disappointed in him. It was just like, as soon as you show me, like, true affection, that's it. I'm cutting you off. And, like, that was messed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it
was. More so than just, like, teaching a kid how to fight, you know, with fists. Well, you know what I mean?
And I think part of what it is, I mean, is the fact that, you know, he's being prepared as a weapon in a war. You know, he can't...
No
be attached.
He can't
be attached in, like, any way. Yeah, exactly. He has to be completely unsentimental, and, you know, that's just not who he is. You know, so it's another really, it opens up, like, a whole new possibility of where they can go in this show. That's what I loved about the episode, is that really sort of made everything bigger. You got to basically see the hand trying to smuggle in a mysterious weapon revealed to be a young child. So it's like, well, is he a martial arts weapon? Is he a mutant? You know, like, unsure, you know, they're really unclear on it.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is, like, because I don't know if you guys have been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but, like, are they kind of, like, trying to tie this into the Inhumans in a way? Like, that's what I thought Black Sky might have been. Because, obviously, you've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and there's stuff going on there with, like, the Inhumans, and they're in some kind of, like, mystical Far East land, you know what I mean? And, and now it's like, okay, what is Black Sky? Is Black Sky part of the Inhumans? Is it, like, are they all tied in together? Like, remember the Chinese, like, drug queen, you know?
Yeah.
At the end, he says, oh, are you just going, or when she leaves, the episode when she leaves, Owsley says, like, are you leaving? And she's like, are you going back? He's like, are you going back to China? And she's like, I'm going back to a land farther away than that, or something like that.
No, I think that ties it back into the Iron Fist thing, because that was it Kun Lun or something like that?
It's
essentially this sort of Shangri-La-esque kind of hidden, you know, society. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, it's Marvel, so eventually, like, even if it doesn't tie together, somebody's going to tie it together. So, yeah, I'm really, really interested in, you know, in seeing sort of where that goes, because it does seem that they're definitely setting all of the pieces in place, not just for any future seasons of Daredevil, but for, you know, their other, you know, other shows.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think the Stick episode was the one that kind of, like, sort of set things into motion as far as, like, Daredevil moving forward a little bit, you know? It's interesting because it was sort of the halfway mark, you know? But, I mean, it's really funny because... I mean, I watched the last episode last night, and I just kept thinking to myself, like, during the whole show, and as it went on, I was like, how is he going to fight this? Because, you know, once you get to the next episode, like, you know, where they sort of reveal Fisk's origin, which is just, like, amazing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that whole episode, like, was fantastic, you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, wow, because, you know, they tell Fisk's story, and you kind kind of sympathize with it, but in the end, you're sort of like, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And the whole, you know, introducing Rigoletto, or like the, you know, the whole thing from the comics, you know, because mm-hmm. that's kind of like there's just all this other history that could lead to, like backstory to Wilson Fisk. And, you know, that episode where they go into Fisk's origins is just like fantastic. It's like one of the better episodes of TV that I've probably ever seen, you know?
And it's the midway point through the show, you know?
Yeah.
It's the episode right after Stick. So you've seen everything that's made Matt who he is at this point. Because they don't do any more flashbacks back to Matt after that.
Exactly.
No, that's not true.
Oh, really? Where did they do that?
Unless I'm mistaken, they did that with... when Foggy finds out who he is.
Oh, that's right. They do. They go back to like their college years.
Yeah.
But not to his kid.
But they don't really go back to his childhood at any point after that.
You
do get to see Fisk sort of at the same, around the same age. You know, I think maybe Fisk looks maybe a little older.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, it does, like at that moment you go back to see him, you know, as a kid, and you meet his asshole of a dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, his crazy, who turns out to be crazy mom, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you realize, wow, like, he's, again, one of the things that somebody mentions it, I don't know whether it's Karen the nurse character, you know.
Oh, yeah,
She mentions
Claire.
She mentions that basically Daredevil is like sort of a product of the city. Like the city, like, sort of made him what he is. And the city made Wilson Fisk exactly what he was too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, can we talk about that genius, that stroke of genius of the painting? Of like, I was just like, that is awesome, you know what I mean? Like, that was just the fact that the painting reminded him of like being put in the corner, and that night where he kills his dad and he's just like has to sit and stare at the wall, and you know, the bad plaster job, and like like that to me was just like, and the fact that Fisk wakes up every morning, you know, and just goes through sort of the same routine, you know what I mean? Like, you show that whole episode, which makes it even more powerful later when he gets more involved with Vanessa, where she kind of like shakes it all up. They show that sequence where she's like picking out different clothes for him, like after he tells her everything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's before Vanessa and after Vanessa. And it's interesting because I kept thinking, like, Leod, you kept saying like the Kingpin last week kind of came across like really weak to you, but what I really thought it was is like, he's only weak when he's dealing with women that are close to him. Like, he's got some serious women issues, like especially particularly with Vanessa, but it's like I was just like this whole thing to me, as much as it has been the beginning of Daredevil by the end of the series, this is very much like the birth of the Kingpin as well, you know what I mean? Like, by that final episode, you have seen like Kingpin sort of like waffle back and forth and sort of have a bit of uncertainty with specific things, but by the end of the show, you know, like, oh man, like even though, you know, spoiler, he gets defeated in the end, like, it's on. Like, this is the birth of something new. Like, he's going to be even more dangerous after this, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on most of those parts, except for the fact that, once again, like, he just, to be at the top of, like, at the level that he is, where he's got all these people in his pocket and he's, you know, able to like take control, I just don't see that many people following him. That's the like one part of the show that I keep having issues with. And I know it's me, and I know that a few other people, but I know that I'm not fitting into the majority.
Well, that was the great bit about, you know, what happens to Wesley, right? I mean, that was just stunning. Like, to me, like, the thing that this show has, did, especially in these last six episodes. Like, there's so many instances where you thought it was, like, you know, when Karen,
you think it's going to go one way, and it goes completely
and it goes
the
completely
other way.
The other way. Like that scene with Karen and Wesley, I thought that that was going to turn into your typical, like, you wouldn't shoot me. Yes, I'll shoot you. You wouldn't shoot me. I'm going to shoot you. And then she grabs the gun and fumbles it or hesitates and he gets the gun back or something.
Yeah.
And that is not what happened at all. Like, it was great. That was genius. That was a genius move. When that happened, like, I was literally sitting there on the couch, like, numb. I was just, like, when Karen shoots Wesley, like, it's like, oh, my God. Like, she just killed that dude. You know what I mean?
Right.
And what's great is that he, you know, he does that line. It's like, you don't think I would be so stupid as to put a loaded gun in front of you, you know? And it was a bluff, you know? It's like he was bluffing, and she calls him on it, and like, yeah, he's dead.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the interesting thing, too, is especially with Karen, they keep dropping these little hints of, like, a sordid past. And, you know, in that scene, she's like, you can't honestly think that this is the first time I've ever fired a gun or something like that, right? And it's like, whoa, what's
that
all about?
Bluff.
I don't know, man, because
I don't know.
I think they're
I
really
be
alluding
wrong.
I think they might be moving the timeline around in the series because it sounds like she's got, like, some sort of past that, you know, that...
Hey, dude. I mean, they're not afraid to play with the timeline because Ben Urich is fucking dead.
I know. And that was another moment at the end of the episode. I was like, dude, they didn't just kill Ben Urich, did they? Like, they didn't kill Ben Urich. I was stunned by that. Like, I thought he was going to get out of it or... like.
Yeah, me too. I was just like, oh, how's Ben going to get out of this one?
I know. And guess what? He's not. You know what I mean? I was
cut,
like,
to funeral.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God. Don't even start with the funeral scene. Like, the song that they play at the end, like, in the beginning of the episode, of the 13th episode, it's just like, it's heartbreaking. You know what I mean? It's just like... The whole thing is so well, like, the funeral scene, I was like, it's so well crafted, it's so well put together, and just the I don't know, man, there were a lot of unexpected turns where, you know, this was not the typical sort of superhero adventure show that we've seen, you know. There's nothing sort of stereotypical all that much about it. I mean, yes, there are things where it's like the fighting crime and the wearing the mask and all that stuff, and, you know, this is my city. But in the end, as far as, like, story and plot goes, I think it really surprised the heck out of me a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the interesting things, like, even the costume is very motivated. I mean, I was really surprised. It's like, okay, well, because you mentioned about how he gets his ass handed to him on a regular basis in this show. And it always seems to have something to do with, you know, with a knife or something that's got a blade. You know, he's always getting cut up.
Yeah.
And that's what his weak spot is. You know, he encounters something that'll take care of that. You know, he comes with a costume that deals with his problem.
Yeah.
And at the same time, like, taps into that weird, you know, psyche, you know, sort of Catholic ninja psyche that he's got going on.
Yeah.
Well, it's really... also they started calling him, I mean, they started the nickname early, the Devil of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, that also was part of it, and which made it more, you know, organic.
Yeah. Well, there was another unexpected sort of twist where he's fighting the guy that makes Fisk's clothes, you know, with the light material that's, like, impervious to damage. And, you know, they're fighting, and then the guy starts crying when he loses. And you see this real, like, I thought for Matt Murdock, it was kind of like a character-building moment when he, like, puts his hand on the guy's shoulder, and he's like, oh, this guy's just as much a victim as everybody else, you know? Like, there was, you couldn't even see, like, Daredevil's eyes in the mask, but the way that he talked to the guy that looks like it's going to be Buzzsaw, or I think that's the character's name. He started throwing the saws around, too.
I heard something about that character, which was he used to be that, and then in the comics, he used to be something like Buzzsaw.
Yeah.
And then they retconned him. That was kind of, and made him a tailor, and that was kind of a nod to who he used to be, whether or not they'll actually make him that, you know.
Oh, gotcha.
Anybody's
gotcha.
Guess kind of gotcha. Thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really funny because I just thought that moment was like a really interesting, tender moment at the end of a fight scene where it was like, oh man, like where he realized even the people that are working for him are sort of like under his thumb. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. not everyone's doing this voluntarily. And then I felt like there was an even stronger resolve after that because he was like, okay, I'm going to take care of him. You know, like it's just, he's, you know, slowly but surely Fisk is sort of building the body count or the amount right. of souls that he's crushing, and Daredevil's discovering it through every episode. You know, I mean, speaking of people that the Kingpin has crushed, who else was destroyed by Elena Cardenas getting killed? Because that hurt me. I was so bummed that nice lady in the apartment got and she was stabbed to death like multiple times. Like one of the worst ways. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, oh man, like that was, it's just, again, it's one of these brilliant things that filmmakers or writers, it's like what you must do is make your villain as despicable as possible, you know, and if you're going to knife an old lady to get her out of her rat-infested, crappy tenement building, like, you are a special kind of scum. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, like, that happens, I think, around episode nine. That happens, and that's also the sort of non-linear time episode that Liad was talking about earlier, yeah. where it opens up with a fight between Nobu, who, you know, is revealed to be a member of the Hand with his red ninja suit and everything, and you know, and then it sort of goes through the episode, and this is the worst that Matt gets beat up. I mean, he takes a lot of abuse in throughout the show, but you know, this is pretty much it. This is the one that nearly does him in.
Because the Kingpin comes in at the end too.
Yeah, because Nobu has, you know, basically gutted him with, you know, that little
blade
with the chain is, and, you know,
yeah.
You know, and he manages to, you know, manages basically, yeah, but with him, like, once Kingpin comes in and, you know, nearly finishes the job.
Yeah.
You know, I was amazed that they figured out a way to sort of get him out of that one, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Yeah. And that made sense.
And also, another interesting thing about that episode is it's not only the low point. It's a low point for Matt Murdock in a number of ways. Mm-hmm. Not only did the woman get killed, so he failed to protect her, right?
Yeah.
And not only does he get his ass handed to him like never before, he also tries to kill the Kingpin.
And,
you know, that's a moral low for him as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he fails.
Yeah.
But, so the rest of the episodes after that are kind of him recovering from that. And,
you know. It's also interesting to me that the biggest part of this episode is in the beginning of the series, he walks into a trap. You know, episode two, and in this one he so obviously walks into a trap again, and it's like there was a part of me that's like, dude, didn't you learn like anything? But at the same time, it's a little bit what we talked about in our last episode, that Daredevil has this kind of pride, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got this, you know, pride goeth before the fall, you know. It's like, it's like Matt, you know, he's a hothead too, you know what I mean? Like he'll leap before he looks, especially in his Daredevil persona, not in his lawyer persona, but in his Daredevil persona, he lets his temper like get ahead of him. And in this, you start seeing that sort of again and again, especially sort of like when he's getting his ass handed to him.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that's like, dude, are you thinking this fight through? Like, you know what I mean? And that's one of his weaknesses.
To be fair though, he did he did learn from the first fight.
Yeah.
From the first trap, because, you know, he did check out this building, but, I mean, he wasn't expecting ninjas. Come on.
Yeah, man. He wasn't expecting ninjas. True. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean,
that's right.
That
he did
little,
listen to
that little
it.
Thing. He's like, hey, you know, and he says, oh, you lowered your heartbeat and you lowered your body temperature. You know?
Yeah,
so that,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, that's where he figures out, okay, yeah, this is, you know, this is a trap.
Yeah.
But the end of that episode, man. He comes home. He's made his way through it.
Yep.
Nearly dies in front of who?
Foggy.
In front of Foggy.
I know. And that was a little bit like of the, oh, really? Because there is a part of me that was like, are we going to do the whole revealing the secret identity to everyone again? You know, that like it's bummed me out in the Spider-Man movies. You know what I mean? And I like...
On the Flash, there's like one character, one person in Central City who doesn't know who the Flash is.
This is what I don't get. Like, that drives me crazy. Yeah, you're talking about the Flash. It's like the only one that doesn't know is the woman, the female, right? And the only one that doesn't know now on Daredevil is Karen. So it's just like really weird. Like, we got to keep the secret away from the girl. You know what I mean? But the thing is that reveal with Foggy, as much as it kind of bummed me out because I like the idea of the secret identities or whatever, you know, it's a leftover from bygone days in comics, but I still really like the hero having the secret. It led to probably one of the better episodes in the show, which is, I loved that episode with Foggy and Matt, where Foggy's like, have you been doing this the whole time? And then they flash back to the college episode. Like, I just thought that was great.
You just reminded me of something, which I mentioned in the previous podcast. And this is the moment, I tried so hard not to ruin it, but this was the moment in that episode. He explains how he got to the point where he couldn't not intervene.
Yeah.
Right,
and you see how... with his abilities, but not just his abilities, but with the inability to stop hearing everything, you know, he couldn't not intervene, because how do you not do something when you know someone needs help?
Yeah.
And you really do have the ability, and you can't not hear them, you know, need that help. And that's why his excuse, or not his excuse, but his reasoning for like needing to save the city really feels real, or to me resonates more than like in Arrow, where it's like, we failed this city. I'm like,
yeah,
dude, you were gone for 5 years.
Yeah, like,
you were gone for 5 years and you're a millionaire.
Yeah,
none of this matters. Yeah, but like, this is a dude who literally hears every cry for help.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, it is really true. Like, I mean, it's right. The city, in a way, does create him because you know he's a product of his environment.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I loved about keeping it in Hell's Kitchen is that, you know, these guys are products of that environment.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that was a great. I loved the title of that show too, of that particular episode, because it was Nelson versus Murdoch.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, that was, that felt like such a comic booky you know, title.
It was really heartbreaking. Well, I mean, just the incident that sets Matt off on his quest that gets revealed, you know what I mean? It's like, again, it's the thing that I keep saying, like, they had to make it so vile, you know, something so vile that you couldn't turn your back, that nobody could pretend, nobody could say, oh, you shouldn't have intervened, you shouldn't have done anything, you know what I mean? They had to make it, you know, a little girl being, you know, molested by her dad. You know, they had to make it something so, and once that spark is set off, that's when he's like, there's no turning back, right? Like, he's like, that's
yeah,
it,
right.
You know, and the other really great part of this episode was, I remember when Foggy discovered, or it was revealed to Foggy that Daredevil was Matt Murdock, mm-hmm. and how heartbroken he was in the comic, and like how how he walked through all the, like, do you realize, like, how messed up this is? Like, we're lawyers. Like, you can't, you know what I mean? Like, do you get, like, how crazy this is, what you're doing? And that episode was just so reminiscent of that comic. I remember just that being one of the bigger moments of Daredevil history, where it's like, Foggy's usually the, like, you know, the sort of nebbish that can never really get anything done right. And it was, like, one of Foggy's few moments where he stood up in the comic and was like, you know, like, no, like, you know, like, this is wrong, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In this episode, like, he's sort of been happy-go-lucky, like, sensitive guy, and you got to see him pissed. And then they alternate that with the beginning of their friendship, right? And that's just fantastic. I mean, that to me was just like, wow, they did a really good job, because it shows you the tragedy of their friendship that could fall apart. It makes you care about it even more, you know, seeing them meet in college and all that stuff, you know, wanting to change the world, right? Like, like, that's great.
And how awesome was it that Foggy was like, I mean, literally, like, he's just excited to have a blind friend, because that opens him up to, like, you know, to dating hot girls. He's a good-looking blind man, you know? It's really funny, because, like, you get to see, by going back that far into Foggy's life, you get to see, oh, wow, this guy, like, developed a conscience over the period of time, and a lot of that's due to Matt.
I thought that was definitely one of the better episodes, and I don't even think that had a lot of action in it, you know what I mean?
I don't know if there was a single fight in that episode, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think so. And because he was beat up.
He was laid low. I mean,
I'm not sure that even with Fisk, I don't know if there was even a fight, you know, in that area of things. So I don't think anything happened.
In that episode, though, like, the plot does, you know, go along. It's not just, you know, them arguing, because, like, what happens is that while they're at a fundraiser, there seems to be an attempt on Fisk's life that ends up taking out Vanessa.
That's right.
That's where you know, suddenly it's like, oh, well, you know, things are starting to crash down for the Kingpin, too.
Well, that was really interesting, too, because, you know, from what I remember of the comic, and it's been a while since, you know, I read some of this stuff, but, you know, Vanessa in the comics does not know that Kingpin was a crime lord. And then she discovers it, and I think that she gets sick or something and gets into some kind of depression. And I was like, wow, this is them sort of like messing with the timeline again, which is like, oh, they're going to show her sick, and they're going to show, you know, Kingpin being like super vulnerable. You know what I mean? And that to me was just like, that's a stroke of genius, because it's like, you obviously, the way they've set up the Vanessa relationship, you're not going to have all that time to, like, you know, build this relationship, and they've been married for years and they have a kid, you know. So instead of doing that, like, it's a very passionate relationship in the beginning, they click, or they work off of each other really well, you know. She, I don't know if she's pulling like a Lady Macbeth or whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it, but then she gets poisoned, and you see that he's like just almost completely lost without her, and it is his, like, really big weak spot, you know.
And you know, like, when she's sort of taken out, and, you know, the possibility of her dying, you know, that's where that really is where everything, like, falls apart. He stops paying attention to everything that's going on around him. And also around this time, you know, Ben and Karen's digging into his past sort of pays off for them.
Because
they discover his mom hidden away inside of a nursing home, and you know, because she's, you know, somewhat, you know, has a bit of dementia or something like that, they're able to find out, oh, he killed his dad, and, you know, he's not the person that he seems to be publicly. And again, that was another great, we totally skipped over that, like, the end of the episode where they're ready to blow the whistle on him. They're going, presses with the thing, and then suddenly, boom, he comes out ahead of them, you know, making this huge public appearance and you know, coming to the rescue of the city, you know. Like this show was really good at cutting the audience's feet out from under them on a regular basis.
Big time, big time. Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a moment where I was like, you know, and again, like Liad said, it's not so much cliffhangers, but moments that happen at the end where you're just like, oh, man. Like, you know, that moment where Ben is writing the article and he's just about finished with it. And it's just like, you're so like, and right after it happens, you're like, of course, you know, it's just like, you know, anything that can happen will happen, right? It's like Murphy's Law. It's like, I just finished writing this whole thing. And then he's like, gotta delete it. And you're just like, wow. And it, what's really funny about Fisk is that he's sort of outplaying them at every turn without even really caring about what they're doing, because he doesn't even know what they're doing. You know what I mean? His game isn't dependent on them. He's so like whatever, in tune to his own thing, that the game that he's playing is two steps ahead of theirs, and he doesn't even know that they exist. You know what I mean? For the most part,
sort of. You're right, but at the same time, everything's crumbling around him slowly, and it's a reaction to the man in the mask. Whole time, everything he does is a reaction to that. And there's even a line where the money guy that he has, he's getting a suit made for him. There's that scene where the money guy is getting a suit made for him, you know, one of those special suits, and you know, Fisk's I can't remember his name, friend, the guy who works under him, comes in and tells him, you know, about the cop who got murdered, and the guy with the mask showed up and all this stuff. And you know, Fisk turns in anger to the money guy, going, "It's being handled." And he goes, "Yes, it is, just not by you."
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know,
And Leland, that's the money guy, man.
Yes, Leland.
You know, I'd read a few things where that the actor who plays him like was getting a lot of shit. People were like, "Oh, he's so over the top. He's
what?
Like,
you know, I liked hammy, him a lot.
I did too, and I really." Thought, because you know, as it turns out, he's sort of the big bad of the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, he's in the comics, he's the owl, right?
Oh, okay.
Like that's Leland Owlsley. Like I think that is the owl's name, Leland Owlsley. I have to go and pick out one of my Marvel Universe encyclopedia things, but yeah, Leland Owlsley. So he
pretty much like nearly takes over from the Kingpin.
Yeah, I mean, that was a fantastic scene towards the end where he's like, all right, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take half your money just because I'm being nice. I could have taken all of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what's great, too, is that he's the only one that, like, faces the King, besides Daredevil, you know, sort of faces, well, in he's the only one in the Kingpin's organization that really like steps up to the Kingpin, Fisk, mm-hmm. and says like in his face, like, all right, screw it, like I'm just taking everything. And he gets killed because of it, because Kingpin's like, whatever, you know, it starts pummeling him to death. But at the same time, it's like, I sort of had a respect for him, you know, but we're watching the show and Amy's like, what are you, stupid? Like, what are you doing? Like, why are you saying this to this man? You know, my wife is basically like, don't say that to him. Don't tell him that. You know what I mean? It's just really interesting, though, because I kind of had respect for that character, because he seemed to be the only one that during the whole series would speak truth to both, you know,
right.
Wesley and Fisk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he manipulates things as, you know, once Vanessa... It's kind of funny. He actually has a point. You know, once Vanessa comes in, Fisk really does lose a lot of his perspective and a lot of his focus, and you know, they're losing money, like the operations really start to fall apart. And then once Owlsley's able to sort of leverage Nobu's death, you know, into basically a strike against Fisk, you know, hiding behind the hand. It's really interesting. It's like it's every character in there has their own agenda, and they're all constantly pushing for it.
Yeah,
you know, it's not all just Kingpin and Daredevil. Every person in there really fights hard for, you know, for what they want.
Yeah. Which, you know, is a really great strength, in my opinion. Again, I have to reiterate the Karen character. I mean, really, in any other show, I mean, every other superhero show, the female lead has been like, oh, I'm in love with the Flash. Oh, you know what I mean? Or, not, you know, it's only, just like...
You're so right.
Oh,
you're
it's infuriating.
Right, it's not just the shows. The movies, too. Let's be honest. Most of the female characters, not in just the shows, in the movies, too, really are flat, if not just super annoying. Like,
I don't disagree.
And you're absolutely right about that.
I mean, I think the one exception might be like the Black Widow in the Winter Soldier. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
she's not like, or in the Avengers, right? She's not like like window dressing, and she's not like, oh, I wonder what the superhero's doing. You know what I mean? It's really like, this is one of the this is the only superhero show that I can think of where it's like the character had a directive that originally had nothing to do with the lead guy and was like going after it no matter what, you know what I mean, and followed all the way through. I mean, was a strong character, you know, wanted to complete her goal and didn't let up on it, was the one that inspired every other character, Ben, you know, Foggy, and even Matt, right? She was the thing, the linchpin that was holding them all together. Even when Matt and Foggy were fighting, she's like, what's going on? Like, this can't come apart, you know what I mean? So I have to just say, like, I just think that they really wrote that character really well, and thank God that they gave her like a lot of, they made her a central focus of the show, and I just think that to me is like one of the biggest things that I enjoyed about it, was like, oh, they didn't just stick her in the corner moony-eyed over, you know, somebody in the show, you know. So I mean, yeah, so what did you guys think of the climax? Because that last episode, like before they got to the last episode, I was like, how are they going to wrap this up? You know what I mean? And it turns out that, like you said about Owlsley, Leland, that he was the big bad kind of in the beginning, but at the same time, he was the idiot that set up what brought the Kingpin down, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah,
you know, he tried to blackmail him because, you know, he was holding out this detective as a sort of an insurance policy. You know?
Yeah,
he had scooped him up and hidden him away.
A detective process, who killed his own partner to prevent evidence of getting out. Yeah,
right. And you know, and in the process, accidentally left a bit of a paper trail. No. Although not actually a paper trail, more of an absence of a paper trail that Foggy and Karen are able to pick up on.
Yeah.
Karen's actually the one who discovers it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and by this, and what's great is, you know, at this point, you know, like, they've all sort of worked out their differences, you know, they're all working together, and it's funny because it actually does happen the way that, you know, she told him that it would work, and the way that he was always, you know, the way that Murdoch was always saying that it would, you know, it's a legal thing, you know. They're essentially able to, you know, to find this guy and get him to testify against Fisk and open him up to racketeering charges.
Yeah, which I loved that sequence when they find the cop that's hiding out, the dirty cop that could testify against Fisk.
Mm-hmm. And in the theater.
Yeah, and they're in there, and the guards are watching him, and then the police come in, and the cop's just about to shoot him, and then he closes his eyes, and it's like, I mean, to me, that was just, like, fantastic. And then it's like Daredevil's there, and he's kicking the crap out of everyone. And just, I love that, like, where Daredevil says something to the effect of, like, he's like, I want you to go straight to the police station and go straight there, and I will be watching you, and if you don't go, you'll regret, like, that you ever, I don't know, like, I don't know what it was, but it was just such a good way to like, it was just such a good threat, you know what I mean? Where it was like,
yeah,
the way he delivered it was like, okay, I'm going right now, you know what I mean? And from then on in, it's like, you get to the final scene where Fisk is being transported to, was it prison?
Well, I mean, that was essentially that he's being taken into federal custody.
Yeah, he's being taken into federal custody. The FBI, dude, talk about like a nice little twist in that last episode where it was the editor's assistant who was on Fisk's payroll and not the editor.
Right.
You know what I
right.
mean? Like where you thought it was the editor who was being paid by Fisk to keep, you know, things under wraps, and it turns out to be like his like nondescript assistant who like
right.
you know you barely saw like in one scene, you know?
Yeah, because they essentially round up everyone you know who's been on Fisk's payroll, so you yeah. see them, you know, you see them coming in and you know taking out the dirty cops, you see them coming in and taking out the, you know, the assistant editor, you start to see that. And then, you know, Fisk is arrested, you know, there's that little dramatic, you know, moment where he proposes to Vanessa, you know,
that
just
was
as
great.
He's being
talk
taken
about
into
a
custody,
way to get proposed. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you know, but then there's that great sort of, in a way, it sort of reminded me of the sequence in, the second Dark Knight movie, you know, where
you know, they're going to transport
where they're like, transporting you know
is it the Joker? No.
The Joker. No, it's not the Joker. They're transporting
Gordon.
Harvey Dent.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
in
yeah,
the truck right. through Gotham, and the Joker attacks and everything like that. You know, you've got this great scene where the Kingpin's being taken, you know, in the FBI truck,
fantastic.
You know, to custody, and then you realize, holy crap, he's got FBI people on his payroll, you know, and they end up, you know, taking it out, and it seems like he's going to get rescued, but then here comes Daredevil in the, you know, in his new do. You know?
Yeah, it's yeah, like yeah.
The first time you see him wearing the new sort of armor, you know, that's been built for him, and you know, and what's great is it doesn't look ridiculous. I mean, I gotta say,
it didn't look ridiculous. You're absolutely right. The way they shot it, it did not look ridiculous.
I'm sort of a bigger fan of the ninja suit, you know, the little black, you know, thing that he was wearing before. But I get the purpose of this and the fact that, like, he's able to pull it off and that, you know, and that it works. You know, it doesn't slow him down and it
yeah.
keeps him from getting cut up. And, you know, he's, you know, by this point, he's decided that he is going to be like somewhat more of a public figure with his, you know, superhero
persona,
figure, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, he's made the decision to sort of commit to that. It's like, okay, yeah, I buy that, you know.
Yeah,
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
You know,
there's so many things right about this final episode that just like really did everything right. And I think the biggest thing is like that not only do Fisk and, well, first of all, Fisk and Matt just have a knockdown, drag out, kick ass, like mano a mano, no holds barred fight. You know what I mean? And that, like, every single action movie that like a Die Hard or something like that, there's always like a big, you have to have that big confrontation at the end, like
right.
where they're just kicking the crap out of each other and the hero just takes him down, you know what I mean? Like, if that's and that was like, I remember the biggest flaw of the Tim Burton Batman movie, where they have this confrontation with the Joker and Batman and it's just sort of like, you know, mm-hmm. it's like a silent fart in the movie theater. Like, nobody cares. But this is, like, fantastic. And not only is the fight just, like, amazing, but again, like you said, it's in the Daredevil outfit. Like, at this point, like, I feel like they've both become the people that they're going to be through the rest of their, you know, whatever, you know, nemesis careers, you know, where they're facing off against each other. And this is, like, the big first fight. And it was an amazing fight. Like, it's just, like, so well done, you know? And I think that you guys are right that the original sort of black ninja costume worked really well. But the thing is like, again, it's the sort of thing that has bugged me a lot about a lot of superhero movies, which is I really am enjoying things until they get into the outfit, you know, and then it becomes like, oh, I was kind of like, my willing suspension of disbelief was fine until Batman put on the suit and started talking like this, you know what I mean? And then I'm like, why isn't everybody in this semi-realistic show that I or movie that I've been watching that is like a really hard-edged crime drama not putting the bat guy in the paddy wagon, you know what I mean? Like, you know, but they're smart enough to make the Daredevil thing look light and not like ceramic armor, which I was very happy with.
And another thing that's cool about it too is in this universe, like, you've already got costumed heroes. So it's like it's a little less of a jump, you know. Yeah. I mean, with the Batman things, like, there's sort of no context for those costumes that you know, crazy costumes that show up.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's a little weird. But with this one, there sort of is. So you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I can go with that. And the one thing that you said, you know, about that amazing fight at the end, I mean, this is a series that's sort of defined by fights, man.
Yeah.
It's really one of those great things. I think it was George Miller who was talking once. He had a great phrase about basically character being defined completely through action. And I mean, that's sort of what this show is. This show is a series of fight scenes that define him as a character. You know, you get to see him, you know, what he can do potentially in all sorts of fight situations, and it sort of leads up to his big moment where he takes the Kingpin down.
Yeah. I mean, that scene, I actually yelled out, like, oh, snap, like, when he flips the Kingpin, like, I was like, whoa, like, I was not expecting that at all. And it's just like, and there is, it was so well done, because there is a scene, there is a moment in that scene where Fisk is on top of him, and you're like, oh, he's about to lose. Like, you know what I mean? Like, like, I really felt like he was going to lose at some point, and like the Kingpin was going to get away. And I was like, oh my God, that would be such a bummer. Don't pull a Rick Grimes on Walking Dead where he keeps getting his ass kicked. You know what I mean? It's like, but no, he like pulls it out at the end. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And I was so worried that they were going to end the series on a cliffhanger. Because they released it all at once.
Could
have so easily just
left
us hanging so that we'd, you know, be ready for the next series or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's just so nice that they kind of wrapped it up. There's still tons of loose ends that they can pick up and just run with. They can so easily do another series if they want.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's self-contained too.
Yeah.
In such a good way. And going back real quick, a real small note, which you talked about the suit, it really develops organically. And in the earlier episodes where the night nurse is taking care of him, she asks him about body armor, and he says it'll just slow him down.
Or
it'll make, you know. So when he finds something that he thinks he can finally wear, you know, and he keeps getting cut up.
You know. It makes sense. Like, it makes sense. It absolutely
does.
Makes sense. I mean, and I was just, you know, and it's really funny because, like you said, they didn't leave us on a cliffhanger. They sort of gave us, like, the happy ending. But at the same time, you know, there's even a line at the end. They're like, well, Fisk still has to go to trial. And it's like, and, you know, you see that scene where Fisk is, like, sitting in the prison staring at the stucco of the prison wall. And it's just like, dude, like, he he is loading for bear, that guy. Like, he's itching to come back, and just, he's going to destroy Daredevil. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's a part of me that's like, oh my God, he's going to get out. Something's going to happen, and Daredevil is just going to, or, you know, he could just be running things from prison. I mean, we've all seen Oz or whatever prison drama, you know, it's just as bad in there. So, like, right. He can control things from inside the prison. I mean, it's
plus
just,
he has Vanessa to control things outside of prison.
That's true, yeah. Too, you know. I mean, I just think, like, there's so many possibilities, and they left us hanging slightly, but with the good, with the, you know, a very good satisfactory ending. And, oh, you know what else I love? I love that bit at the end with Karen and Matt, you know, where they're standing in front of the door, like Foggy's like, oh, I'm going to go off and, you know, whatever. She ends up being his future wife, who's like a ball buster in the comics, right? But, I mean, they're standing in front of the door and they just hold hands and, you know, they're like, we're in it together, but there's no kiss. There's no, mm-hmm. like, la-di-da, romantic moment. You know, it's just like, we're going to be really great friends and it's going to go from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, right.
It's just fantastic. It's that relationship to me was, you know, again, like, I think, like, all the relationships really played out really well, and I'm just so impressed that they never went the easy route, which was to make, you know, Matt and Karen a couple, and what are you doing, and this is so bad, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's they didn't go that route, and they just avoided it completely, and yeah, I just think the whole thing was just so well put together, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really happy with this format. I want to see
Me too.
More superhero shows done in yeah. this format.
It would be great.
Especially now that Marvel has the rights to Ghost Rider again.
Dare we hope that they do a Ghost Rider TV show? Johnny Blaze! Johnny Blaze! Well, you know, there were rumors today.
They could also do Punisher.
That's what they were saying. There were internet rumors today. Like, could they do the Punisher? And I'm like, oh, man. Look, all I want right now, it sucks because the next series is Jessica Jones, right? I don't
right,
really yeah. care about that. Like, I'm not...
I know. I'm with you, but I heard that supposedly the tone of each series is very different.
No.
Close.
Dude, all I know is that they're setting up for Power Man and Iron Fist.
I know! Like, that's what
I
want.
I'm on with that, you know.
I know, I want Iron Fist. I want Heroes for Hire.
Here's the nice thing, too, though, is you know, when they're describing, like, the tones of the show, they say that, like, really that they're aiming for PG-15.
That's great.
You know, they're like, yeah, we don't, they're like, you know, we don't want it to be, like, totally, you know, like, R, you know, like, we don't want it to be, like, oh, my God, you know, like, this is just, you know, adults only, you know, but at the same time, it's really cool. Again, like, the network TV shows are sort of their own thing, and yeah. you know, but this is sort of perfect for, you know, exploring those sort of long style shows. This is the graphic novel format here.
Yeah, like you said, like Liad said last week, and also, you know, like you said last week, this is the Marvel Knights of the. I hope that the rest of them, like, I hope Jessica Jones, I guess it's being written by one of the women. She worked on a Twilight movie or worked, you know, she wrote one of the Twilight movies or a couple of them. And I'm just
The director of the first one, she's very good.
Oh, okay. All right. I mean, I like the Jessica Jones thing. I read a little bit of Alias when it first started, and I know it's like Bendis's baby, and Bendis is like really, he can be really good when it comes to crime and like single characters mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I hope the tone doesn't change too much, you know. I mean, I know it's going to be female-centric, but there's a part of me that, again, sees the stereotypical, like, you know, sort of, like, flighty, sort of, you know.
Well, the tone I heard that supposedly this one's going to have is more kind of film noir, which this kind of had anyways, but I guess more so.
Yeah.
Which is cool. you know, that would be cool. Like,
yeah.
That's not, you know, not what you were talking about at all. So it would be cool.
I may be picking up that Alias Omnibus that they did, just so I'm familiar with, you know, what it is, because I know a little bit about it. I read some of it. I know that she like has a baby with Luke Cage at some point, you know, and you know, but that's pretty much all, or that she used to be a costumed hero and like retired and then was just trying to lead a normal life. So be interesting to see where that goes. I just don't know that I'm so crazy about the lead actress. What's her name? Kristen Ritter, is that right? I mean she did well in those couple episodes of Breaking Bad, but I don't know, I just don't see her as like sort of like a superhero crime fighting kick-ass, you know, chick. But maybe she'll surprise me. I mean, you know, they've done a great job with this. So yep. We'll see.
Agreed.
All right. So this has been part two of Part-Time Fanboys Daredevil exploration. Like, yeah. Thanks for doing this, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no, it's great. I am Christian Horn. I'm on the line with Paul Edwards, and Leod Goldberg has returned. And hopefully we will be back soon with another episode. And if you haven't finished, go watch Daredevil, because it's fantastic.
Seriously.
And you shouldn't have been listening to this episode anyway if you haven't
finished. That's true.
Yeah, exactly.
Spoiler alert, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I put them on the site. All right. Thanks for listening, and hopefully we'll be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboys.